Good morning, and may it please the Court. Jason Figueredo for Appellant Larry Cortinez. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for a rebuttal, if possible. The issue in this case is whether Mr. Cortinez exhausted his administrative remedies. We believe dismissal was improperly granted because Mr. Cortinez's administrative remedies were effectively unavailable and therefore exhausted. The lower court relies on the theory that since Mr. Cortinez filed 18 previous appeals to the third level, that he lacked credibility to claim that he did not know that he still had available administrative remedies. This is mainly because prior to this appeal, he had received letters from the third level stating that he had next viable steps. However, we believe that this is wrong for two reasons. First, even if there were any administrative remedies still available to Mr. Cortinez, they were not capable of use at hand.
Pardon me, your voice drops off as you read what you're reading.
Sorry.
And I don't hear it.
I'm sorry. First, even if there were any administrative remedies still available to Mr. Cortinez, they were not capable of use. Second, there are disputed facts whether Mr. Cortinez even knew if he had administrative remedies still available. Mr. Cortinez's administrative remedies were...
Isn't the issue here whether the July 30th letter was delivered to Mr. Cortinez and that told him that he had to appeal at the second level and not go to the third level?
That is correct. That's one of the issues, I believe. However,
now, why don't you address what the record evidence is as to whether the July 30th letter was indeed delivered to Mr. Cortinez?
So according to Mr. Cortinez, the letter did not accompany the decision. However, according to the CDCR, it is their custom and practice to include this letter with all decisions.
So there's an issue of fact to
there
be
is
determined
an issue
by
of...
the court below. And how did the court determine that?
The court determined that since Mr. Cortinez received 18 previous letters with his previous decisions, that it was more than likely that he received this letter.
No. The court determined that because of the evidence that the regular procedure was to attach a letter such as the July 30th letter, Mr. Cortinez did receive it.
Yes, sorry.
All right.
Yeah.
So now, is that determination an abuse of discretion?
Is it abuse of discretion? I just believe that...
First of all, that's the standard we want to use, abuse of discretion, right?
Correct.
Or clearly erroneous if it's a factual finding.
Yeah, clearly erroneous.
So didn't the trier of fact have some evidence upon which a reasonable person could find that the letter was indeed attached?
I believe it's because it's the CDCR's custom and practice to attach this letter, yes, it is reasonable to believe that it was attached. However, it doesn't necessarily mean it was attached. I mean, humans make mistakes, and therefore this could happen where they send out a letter that the letter is not attached. I mean, we all kind of do that when we send emails. Sometimes we forget to attach an attachment. I believe that Mr. Cortinez is saying that he did not receive this letter this time. He received the decision, but not the letter.
But even if Mr. Cortinez did not receive the attached July 30th letter, he was given notice that his appeal was denied.
He was given notice
on that front page.
Correct, right. on the decision page.
And so I guess I'm just trying to figure out, he knew how to appeal and about his option to appeal a cancellation decision. Why isn't that sufficient? I mean, because this was not his first one. He's had several others as the magistrate judge.
Exactly. Mr. Cortinez's argument is that with these 18 previous appeals, he was heavily medicated and did not really understand the process at the time, even though he partaked in it.
But he has appealed before.
He has appealed to the third level before. And
right.
He appealed this to the third level also, but it got rejected back down. We believe
and
that.
And he has access to the California Code of Regulations, doesn't he?
He had 1 hour a day to go to the law library every day since he was in solitary confinement. I'm not sure if that's really enough for him to really understand the CDCR regulations and what needs to be.
Well, we've made that determination before, haven't we, that when petitioners like your client have access to the code of regulations and library access, that is likely sufficient?
Yes, that has been determined by this court before. However, I don't think that Mr. Cortinez really fully understood his next options to to appeal. And just because he had dealt with this before, it doesn't mean that he doesn't need to be reminded of what has to happen.
But is that your best argument?
No, my best argument, because, honestly, is that even if he did receive this letter, his administrative remedies were effectively unavailable to him.
Well, but let's talk. Let's talk about Sapp versus Kimbrell for a moment. I'm just trying to figure out if, in fact, he could appeal his cancellation decision. What distinguishes his case from Sapp?
Sapp's cancellation, well, to be honest, I don't really know the distinguish between those two. Sapp, Sapp's cancellation is a little different, mainly because Sapp received the letter, I'm guessing. I mean, Your Honor, I'm not really certain on that, to be honest.
Okay. So what's the best case, I guess, for your argument on behalf of Mr. Cortinas, that is administrative remedies, including the remedy to appeal his cancellation decision were effectively unavailable to him?
I believe that his remedies were effectively unavailable because the interview requirement required by Title 15 became a simple dead end for him. When on-site prison officials thwarted his ability to satisfy this requirement by misrepresenting his desire to
Mr. Figueiredo.
Yes.
Judge McGee asked you your best case, not a analysis of the facts.
My best case. I guess Nunez v. Duncan is my best case, because in that case they lay out that a failure to timely exhaust an administrative remedy claim is excused if the plaintiff took a reasonable appropriate steps to exhaust his claim and he was precluded from exhausting his claim not by fault of his own. And we believe that Mr. Cortinas reasonably and appropriately took the steps to file his claim. He went to the first level, second and third level, and when that was rejected, he was precluded from exhausting his claim, not by fault of his own, but because the on-site prison official was not getting him to fulfill this interview requirement, which is required for all appeals in the CDCR. And if someone is blocking him from obtaining or from being a part of this interview, it's automatically going to cancel his appeal because he's not being asked to attend this interview. He's not going to be able to fulfill the interview, and then it's just going to cascade down every time he tries to file an appeal.
Thank you very much.
There are no further questions.
Good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is Jenny Parkman, and I'm arguing on behalf of all defendants' appellees. This case is decided by the Prison Litigation Reform Act and Title 15 of the California Code of Regulations, which together require an inmate to exhaust a grievance through the third level of administrative review before filing a lawsuit. In this case, it's undisputed that Mr. Cortinas did not exhaust his grievance through the third level of review. There's plenty of evidence to support the district court's finding that remedies remained available, and because the statutory exhaustion requirement of the PLRA is mandatory and strictly applied, there's no excuse for Mr. Cortinas' failure to exhaust. I'll take the court through the facts here. Mr. Cortinas' grievance was canceled at the second level for refusing an interview, and he was informed of the cancellation and the reason for the cancellation on the grievance form itself and in a separate letter that was mailed to him. Those are in the record at SCR 225 and 228-29, and Mr. Cortinas does not contest that he received both of those documents. A cancellation, unlike a denial, is not a decision on the merits and does not exhaust that level of administrative review. That rule is in the code at 3084.1 subsection B. So an inmate cannot appeal a cancellation to the next level. So the question is, what is an inmate in Mr. Cortinas' position to do when he disagrees with the reason for a cancellation?
Now, let's back up a little bit if we can, okay? It seems like the district court made its finding that Mr. Cortinas did not receive the July 30th, 2012 letter in part based on the fact that it was the custom and practice of the CDCR appeals office always to attach the letter. Is the fact that CDCR always attaches a letter sufficient for us to uphold, I guess, the finding of fact here? It seems like it would be an easy mistake and not a common mistake for someone to think something is attached. I know from lawyers, they think they attach something and it's not attached, even though it's always their practice to attach it. I'm a little uncomfortable with that finding. And what's your response to that?
There's at least one more piece of evidence here. At first, I'll stress that this finding was made at the conclusion of an Albino hearing where four people testified, including Mr. Cortinas, and the court's finding was based on a credibility determination about that testimony. There's also the actual grievance in this case that was returned from the third level. Mr. Cortinas admits that he received the grievance form, and that grievance form contained a notation that said, "See attach third level response." Mr. Cortinas admits that he received that, and the court did not find it credible that Mr. Cortinas would have seen that notation to see an attached response and would not have at least sought out that response if it really wasn't attached, especially in light of Mr. Cortinas's prior experience with the third level.
Yeah, so the district court's factual determination here is what? I mean, he made a credibility determination, I guess, that Mr. Cortinas did receive it based on his demeanor?
Well, the district court made a factual finding that Mr. Cortinas received that letter. That finding was supported by a testimony, as you said, from the third level chief.
It's a little different because there was no one here that said, "I gave it to him."
Right, but there was.
I know he had it. It was like, we always attach it, so he must have gotten it.
Well, it was a factual dispute, and the second piece of evidence that the court pointed to was that the grievance said, "See attached third level response." That was on the grievance, and Mr. Cortinas admits that he received that grievance, that he read that letter, that he saw that.
And he says the letter wasn't attached.
Right, and so the court said that if that really was the case, Mr. Cortinas had multiple ways of seeking that response, and there's no evidence here that he sought out that response. And, there's also evidence here that he has previously filed Form 22s, which is a way to officially tell the prison there's a service or some kind of action that I want. So he could have filed a Form 22 saying, "Hey, where's my response?" He could have sent a letter to the third level. There's just no evidence that he didn't receive that response, and that's not credible that he didn't receive it in light of the notation that told him to see that attached response.
Well, your position is that once he saw that it said letter attached, he should have taken some action to say, "I didn't get the letter?" Isn't that what he's done now?
Is that what he's done? He filed a lawsuit.
And said, "I didn't get the letter."
Right, but our position and the district court's factual finding is that it's not credible that at the point that he received the grievance, once he read that notation to see attached response, he wouldn't have taken action immediately to seek out that response because
that was based on him having 18 prior complaints. Because he knows the system.
It was a credibility determination based on evaluating Mr. Cortinas' testimony. The 18 appeals come into play because each of those appeals came with a letter attached. So Mr. Cortinas knew that when he receives a response from the third level, or any level really, in this case from the second level, he got a letter attached. He knew to expect not only the actual grievance form, that's 602, but also to expect an attached letter that actually constitutes the official response of CDCR.
Did he have access to the California Code of Regulations? Does he have library access?
There was testimony from Captain, yes, Your Honor, Captain Campbell at the Albino hearing on SCR 128 testified that the Title 15 was available in the prison library and that therefore Mr. Cortinas would have had access to it, and that was at CSP Corcoran where he was incarcerated. And this letter is not the only piece of evidence, as Your Honor has pointed out with that question, that the remedy of challenging a cancellation was available to Mr. Cortinas. There's also the Title 15, and there are two letters in this case that Mr. Cortinas received in response to prior appeals that informed him of the process under Section 30 84.6, subsection E, of how he can challenge a cancellation. One of those letters he received on November 9th, 2011, and the second on March 7th, 2012, just 5 weeks before he received the cancellation in this case. And those are in the record at 249 and 251. So there's plenty of evidence that the procedure of challenging cancellation was available at CSP Corcoran. There's also the matter of the continuance that Mr. Cortinas requested in this case. During the hearing, he asked for the continuance for two reasons, so he could request some, so he can make a motion to compel about some privileged documents that were withheld, and so he could subpoena two witnesses, the warden of the prison and the person who actually signed the letter. But during the Albino hearing, he offered to the court that it would be fine if the court reviewed those documents in camera, and he offered that those two witnesses, they wouldn't add anything to the proceedings. So on the basis of that, the court proceeded with the Albino hearing, and he cannot argue now that...
How often during this time period was he in solitary confinement? And doesn't that affect his access, or does it? That's what I'm asking both counsel.
There's testimony that he was in the secure housing unit.
When? I mean, throughout the whole time?
I think he testified that he was there since he was placed at CSP Corcoran, but he would have had access to the library. He could have had access to the Title 15, and that was the testimony of Captain Campbell, and he hasn't contested that he would have...
He was in solitary?
Yes, Your Honor. And the actual 602 form tells him that if he has any questions, this is at SCR 224, if he has any questions about how to proceed with the appeals process, he should consult Section 3084. So I want to go back to Sapp versus Kimbrell. At the time when Sapp was decided in 2010, the procedure, if an inmate disagrees with a cancellation, was to file a lawsuit and argue that improper screening prevented the inmate from exhausting remedies. And that was because back then, a cancellation was the end of the line. It was a dead end. That changed by the time that Mr. Cortinas had filed the grievance in this case in February 21, 2012, under Section 3084.6, subsection E, an inmate could separately challenge the grievance. So if an inmate receives a cancellation, he files a separate grievance. If the prison agrees with him, then the underlying grievance is reinstated. He can exhaust it all the way to the third level. If the prison disagrees with him, then he exhausts the separate challenge to the third level, and then he can file a lawsuit and argue under Sapp versus Kimbrell that improper screening prevented him from exhausting remedies on the underlying challenge.
How would Mr. Cortinas know about this change?
I'm sorry?
How would he know about the change?
So in this specific case, he had received the letter, the July 30th letter, telling him how to challenge a cancellation. He had received the two other letters in response to prior appeals. It's in the Title 15. When Title 15 is amended, there's initial statement of reasons, final statement of reasons. These are posted in the prison. I mean, that part of it is not on the record, the actual process of how a change to the regulations happens, but that's the general way that inmates find out about this. And again, the test under Ross versus Blake is not, remedies are unavailable in the situations where there's a dead end, when they are so opaque as to be unknowable. In this case, they're knowable, they're in the Title 15. Or if there's some kind of thwarting through machination, misrepresentation, intimidation, there's no evidence of that below. If there are no more questions, I just reiterate that the PLRA requires inmates to exhaust all available remedies. In this case, Mr. Cortinas did not exhaust available remedies, and this court should affirm.
Do you wish to use your rebuttal time?
I would just like to say that Mr. Cortinas's credibility was not undermined just because he had received 18 previous appeals. I mean, the lower court can't make that determination just because he had seen them before. The fact that he claims that he did not receive this letter, even though it said see attached, does not mean he lacks credibility to make this claim. Also, the fact that Mr. Cortinas wanted to call the person that signed the letter is important, because that person has firsthand knowledge of actually printing that letter out and signing it and possibly putting it in the mail and sending it to whoever, to the prison house. I think that is very important to call that person, and by not calling that person, that it in turn prejudiced his decision on getting a continuance.
This is the person that would have mailed the letter to Mr. Cortinas?
This is the person who signed the letter, correct?
I assume they send out many letters. How would that person have a specific or independent recollection that what was attached to the letter?
Well, at least they have a firsthand knowledge of seeing the letter itself. No one other than no one has firsthand knowledge of even seeing this letter. We just assume that this letter is part of the decision because this is their custom and practice. However, if we had the person who actually put paper to pen on this letter, maybe we could have fleshed that out a little bit. And also the fact that we didn't call, or the people below didn't call the prison official who went to go ask Ms. Cortinas for this interview is also a problem. I mean, he's the only person who knows whether or not he actually conveyed to Ms. Cortinas that this interview is imperative to keeping his claim alive. There are no further questions.
Thank you very much. Thanks, counsel, for your argument. And the case of Cortinas versus Portillo is marked for submission. And we'll go to the last case on today's calendar, Ana Beatriz Biocchini versus Sessions.